if we're gonna start, can you discuss your own experience with soccer?
Sure, I would say that my childhood was very much focused on soccer. I mean, sports in general, but then soccer specifically, just because, I don't know, I guess it was the sport I had most success in, and so I played myself, and I, was a passionate soccer fan. And I started playing for a semi-professional team in Austria when I was 15. So this is second league in Austria, which the first league is fully professional, and the second league is semi-professional. And I played for that team for 4 years, and then a variety of reasons made me decide to stop playing soccer on that level when I was 19. It was partly because of the way things were going with the club, partly because I started to have problems with soccer politics, if you will, and then partly just because I wanted to have more time to do other things, mainly travel and whatnot. But since that time, so this is now 20 years ago, I mean, since that time, I've always been closely in touch with the game in various ways. I mean, also in a lot of my travels, you always, especially of course, if you like soccer, you always encounter soccer in all sorts of different settings, again, both as a player and as someone who watches. And I guess out of all these experiences, the idea for this book, Soccer versus the State, that I just published with PM Press, came along.
All right. What was there a certain moment that caused you to write the book that inspired you, or was it more a general experience?
Actually, to be honest, I think the first time I got the idea to write something about the relationships between soccer and politics, and especially radical politics that the book is about, I think the first time I had the idea was probably 6 or 7 years ago when I spent a lot of time in the US, actually, and I discovered that soccer was really popular amongst radical communities and activists, which was sort of interesting because, I mean, it is popular amongst those communities in Europe as well, but not to the degree I found in the States. And I think that what made it particularly curious for me was that soccer in general obviously is not the dominating sport in North America. And I guess in that context, I realized that a lot of these people really loved the game of soccer, obviously, for different reasons, but they didn't have the kind of historical background that I guess a lot of people in Europe have, just because soccer is so much part of, everyday life and everyday culture and whatnot. And I think the idea was to write something that would provide these people with some more general knowledge about the history of soccer, the politics of soccer. And out of that, that inspired me to write a pamphlet that appeared that came out 5 years ago, which was about soccer and radical politics, and got fairly popular enough for me, together with PM Press, to develop the idea of expanding it and adding a lot of interviews and articles with and by other people and illustrations to turn this into a proper book.
Okay, great. How would you describe the current state of international soccer, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. The last, I would say, 15, 20 years have really seen an enormous commercialization of the game, and it's become even more popular, I think, worldwide. I mean, today, even in North America, or also if you look at Australia and New Zealand, countries, or Asia, countries and regions where soccer doesn't have maybe the same history as it has in Europe or Latin America. It's gotten more popular. There's more money involved, even in the European leagues. If you look, for example, at the German league, I mean, attendance has at the Bundesliga in that case has increased dramatically over the last 5 and 10 years. So in that sense, I think the phenomenon of soccer as a kind of worldwide spectacle, if you will, has become more and more relevant. At the same time, and I guess that's related to it in some sense. There is also a what I call like a grassroots or an alternative soccer culture has developed by people who really, you know, love the game and love to play soccer, also love to watch it, but have certain problems with, you know, money becoming a big part of the game and certain interest groups, if you will, having a big say in the game, who are not necessarily all that interested in football itself, but in the possibilities that football offers economically, politically. And I think that kind of, there's this sort of tension, if you will, between the really strong commercial professional game and the more kind of independent DIY soccer underground that we are witnessing today. And I was trying to capture some of that in the book as well.
All right, great. Are you concerned at all with the issue of corruption in the international game? I know that was quite an issue with the World Cup bid. Is that a concern for you personally?
I mean, sure. It's definitely one of the parts that are discouraging when it comes to the big football associations, FIFA and others, and also national football associations. The control, what we know as, you know, the organized football or the professional game, corruption is definitely a huge factor in many different ways. Also, studies have been done. Sometimes it is very blatant and obvious. I think it just happens when you have a lot of, as I said before, a lot of people with different interests in the game that are not necessarily related to the sport itself. Certainly, that's a problem and something, again, that I think leads a lot of people to kind of, you know, mistrust the official professional game and rather try to go back to a more kind of, you know, grassroots-based form of playing soccer.
All right. I got a hypothetical question for you here. If you had a position of power, let's say in UEFA or even at FIFA, what kind of changes would you look to make, or what kinds of things would you look to change?
Definitely to begin with, trying to make those organizations more democratic. I mean, one of the biggest problems also with the corruption is that a lot of football associations aren't necessarily very democratic. I mean, you know, certain people are voted into certain positions, but the number of people who are allowed to, you know, vote for them is very limited, and that's very much based on, you know, economic and political power and all that. So I definitely try to have a more kind of, you know, from a democratic structure that really starts from the bottom, and, you know, it's like bottom up, if you will. That's one thing. And I think a lot of decisions kind of would come from that would affect the game in more positive ways, about, you know, distribution of the big tournaments, also distribution of funding. One thing that I think would be very important is also to further strengthen the women's game, which, you know, especially from the official association, has been really neglected or even forbidden from, you know, around 1920 to 1970. And even though a lot of support support has increased in the last 20 or 30 years, I think there is a lot more that can be done. And I would also like to see the associations to be even more involved in campaigns against racism in football, homophobia in football. I mean, again, there's been encouraging steps that we have seen in the last 10 or 15 years, but that's definitely something that, if I had a chance to do something in those associations, that's something I'd push for as a priority.
Okay. Do you think soccer is the most political sport in the world, or do you think it's just sort of an unavoidable consequence of just, you know, everyday life? I mean, with politics being involved with everyday life, what do you think about that? Is soccer more political, or is it just like everything else?
I would say it's more political in the sense that it's the world's most popular game. I think that the politics of soccer very much have to do with the role that soccer plays in society. I mean, in itself, you know, it's a game like many others, and as we have also seen in history, can be connected with all sorts of different political forces, from reactionary to revolutionary. I think the the specific political interest in when it comes to soccer comes from the fact that it is a global game, that it is globally the most popular game. And then in that sense, it's a very powerful game that can affect people in many different ways. And obviously for all sorts of political interest groups, that becomes a very, very interesting and enticing to develop different relations to the game. So in that sense, I would make the argument that soccer is probably the most politically loaded game, if you will.
All right, great. What do you see as the role of soccer? Do you think it's more often used to create change and to inspire people? Or do you see historically that it's been used to kind of oppress people or keep people down or even divide people? What do you see the role of soccer historically?
I think historically we've really seen both. I think it's been a constant struggle between, you know, the exact two tendencies that you've described, and I think this is ongoing. I think, unfortunately, but not surprisingly, when we look at the professional game and when we look at the forces that very much control the game, you know, big money and people with a lot of political influence who are often, you know, want to secure the power they have, then we've seen a lot of very conservative tendencies where, you know, the success of national teams or also certain clubs is used to, it's used for political propaganda purposes. But at the same time, you know, soccer has also always been an opportunity for, you know, the masses, if you will, to express, you know, different political ideas, protests, rebellions. I mean, one must not forget that especially in you know, very authoritarian societies, it is often soccer stadiums where people have been able to gather relatively uncontrolled, which also has always opened up opportunities to express protests that, you know, couldn't be expressed otherwise. Fascist Spain is one of the best known examples where in Catalonia, especially Barcelona, or also in the Basque country, people could express things at soccer games that they couldn't express otherwise. So for me, obviously, in you know, soccer versus the state, I've been trying to trace the more rebellious side of soccer, which has always existed. And I think because, again, history is often written by the powerful, the kind of more rebellious history has sometimes been forgotten, but it's, you know, it's been very strong. And as I said, I've been trying to present that in the book.
Okay. Just to kind of bring in some current events, what are your thoughts on various supporter groups being involved in the protest in Egypt? That was seen as something where obviously soccer and politics was brought to the forefront with current events. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think in relation to Egypt, what's really interesting is the political role of the ultra movement, if you will. I mean, the ultras centered in Europe as a fairly recent supportive phenomenon, even though it goes back into the late 60s in Italy, if you really trace that history. But as a phenomenon that's really been more influential, it's probably just about 15 years old, I would say. And I mean, basically, it's a very dedicated forum of supporting your team in groups that are very well organized, that, you know, have different choreographies in the stadiums and a very, you know, very visible and very, very loud. And this phenomenon has spread to Egypt. So when we're talking about the involvement of soccer supporters in the revolution there, we're mainly talking about ultra supporters of Al Ahly, and then also Somalic and maybe some other groups, some other clubs, but specifically Al Ahly. And I think with Egypt, it's interesting because a lot of ultra groups don't want to be political, even though that's very difficult because, in my opinion, you're always in some way political, as that's just part of, you know, how life works. But what happened in Egypt was that the Alter clubs officially again had that position that they're not political, but then they left it up to individual members to do whatever they wanted to do in that situation. And as it turned out, a lot of Alters went to Tahrir Square and I guess played a specifically significant role in the street fights, which is not necessarily surprising because Ultras have a lot of experience in, confrontations also with the police and whatnot. So it's not surprising that they played a role there. And now we have videos on YouTube where Al-Ahli honors up to 50 members, apparently, who died in those protests. And then especially given the different segments also in the Egyptian Revolution, where I guess you had one really big kind of segment of more urban, Western-oriented youth who were involved. I think this is pretty representative for where most of the Ultra members come from as well. So yeah, I was not surprised to see that. But I think it's a good example of how, soccer can connect with mass protests.
Okay. Just to kind of look to the future a little bit, do you think the 2022 World Cup is going to help create some change in the Middle East? It's one of the things that's been talked about a lot here in North America. Even though the U.S. didn't get the World Cup bid, it was seen as a real positive force that possibly having the World Cup in the Middle East would help create some lasting change and leave a legacy even after the World Cup's over.
I mean, it's possible. And I mean, to me, it seems that, the World Cup's going to happen in Qatar. Obviously, you can have different views on that, whether that was a good decision or not. I mean, now it's going to be there. And I think ideally you'll make the best out of it and possibly can, it can help also, strengthen some, democratic movements and also bring some questions to the table that maybe otherwise are often kept under the table. I mean, the one particular example I'm thinking of, because it's already been discussed, is the question of, homophobia, the rights of homosexuals, because that was one of the critiques first that came up when the World Cup was given to Qatar. Because homosexuality is outlawed, so people were asking, what about homosexual fans who go there? And FIFA president Sepp Blatter made a very poor remark where he kind of joked about it and said, well, if they go, then they can't have sex for some weeks. Obviously that was criticized by a lot of people. And I think what could happen technically is that you turn this around, like make this, an issue. The fact that, homosexual fans have a problem traveling there that could possibly lead to debate in Qatar and ideally maybe, lead to a change, those kinds of laws. So I think you'd basically have to use the opportunity to bring progressive to bring progressive issues to the table and make that part of a discussion that obviously will be had, once the World Cup is there, because a lot of eyes will be on Qatar and the whole region.
All right, perfect. And just kind of the last question, talking about your style as a writer, do you consider yourself to be provocative as far as the content that you talk about? I know that there were a lot of different things written about the book, and do you think that's part of your style, or is it, do you think maybe you're bringing up issues that maybe aren't in the mainstream, I guess?
Well, I mean, I definitely don't, set out to be provocative in any way. I mean, there's a certain history, there are certain issues that I'm interested in, which, very broadly speaking, revolve around social justice. If that means that I raise some issues that people find provocative, then, I don't have a problem with that, I think, because I think the issues that I raise are important, and I think it's important to have those discussions. Sometimes, I guess, a bit of provocation helps to have good discussions. So in that sense, that's fine by me, but it's not something that I set out to do. I just want to write about the things that are interesting to me and that I find important.